God's not dead, he's merely hiding. You can see him in the morning when the sun is rising. Reed's not good and God's not dead. Don't care what Nietzsche or Ayn Rand said. The blood of every man is red, and I'm not going to war. They justify all the things they do with convoluted logic and waves still pound upon the sand and will when they're gone. God's not dead, he's merely hiding. You can see him in the morning when the sun is rising. You can build a paradise or wall yourself into a tomb. A kick against the holy wound. A kick against the wound.
It is time for a weekly visit from our favorite social, political, and metaphysical commentator, Les Visible. He writes several blogs right around the globe that expresses reality as it is seen from beyond that smoky mirror of spin and deception, with a style and candor that cuts deep, separating, as it were, the bone from the marrow. And here at Feet to Fire, we experience the audio edition with the powerful poetic delivery of his written message, with a style that you will love or hate, depending upon your desire to be alive and awakened to the light of truth, or remain asleep in the darkness of delusion. Let's take a trip across the pond to somewhere in Europe, and this week's comments from Les Visible.
Aru! Greetings, my friends, far and wide. Apologies for the lateness of the show coming. I had done an on-the-wing all-music show with Scott last week, and in my uninvestigated awareness of what happened during the session, I thought I was good to go. Well, it didn't sound as great as I thought it did. Our later sessions got better, and that is how it should be. You improve. We only had 2 days, though, and all of these things went down on one of them, so now I have to do another radio show, and as usual, I've been busy and busier. So greetings this fine afternoon from points unknown, here in the saucer pod, hovering above the transforming landscape in hoodoo woo-woo country. I was able to show my guests the saucer pod while they were here, and we hope to have it fully operational at some point. At the moment, it is limited in scope and relies heavily on the imaginative facility. The world is starting to resemble a Johnny Cash song. I fell into a burning ring of fire. Yeah, there we go. My optimism is still high, and sometimes so am I, given the bells of heaven that peal as the denouement approaches. I don't think 2012 has come down in any way, shape, or form in terms of what many of us expected. The watchword seems to be, do not expect what you think you expect, because most of our expectations are based on the perception of appearances. We really have to get around judging things by appearances. I've had this point hammered into me over recent times, especially in this year. What I think I see is not what I see. It is to a degree, given partial apprehension, but the totality remains obscured in a mist, just as we are obscured from ourselves in our own totality. It seems that we see ourselves in the context of our hopes and dreams, our relationships, our possessions, our industries, and our likes and dislikes, but these are merely the temporary holding states of this given lifetime. Resident below all of this is the eternal river of our timeless self. This is who we are, and the only self that has any meaning in terms of anything lasting and meaningful. The self sits behind the mortal mind and is a silent witness of all that takes place. It is self-contemplative. It is secure within the temple of the archetypes. It is inviolable and untouchable. It is immortal and invulnerable. It is only our immortal self that is vulnerable and which will pass away when its work is done in any particular lifetime, when any particular temporary self arrives to go through the changes assigned to it. I keep wanting to say the same thing over and over these last few days. Beware of the deceptive message of appearances. We've all had those moments where we have misjudged people and found ourselves to be wrong, those of us willing to admit such a thing. And we've all made errors in perception about nearly everything. We're hasty. We're prejudiced. We may not think we're prejudiced, but we are, because below the surface is that nasty residue pool of racial memory, blood tie consciousness, and all manner of things that have followed us through our evolution to the moment we find ourselves in today. When I say prejudice, I do not simply mean racially prejudiced, even though I did mention racial memory. That does not necessarily mean racially prejudiced. That rather refers to the hive mind of our forebears and those things specific to the racial strains we have emerged from. Most people are suspicious of colors and races other than their own, the same way that they look at religions different than their own. The fundies from different religions even consign the practitioners of other religions to hell, because when you don't know what you're talking about and you have an arrogant elitism about things you don't understand, then you're always right, no matter who dies or who gets hurt. The American Christian fundies are a huge army of marching Michelin tire men and Macy's Thanksgiving Day parade floats. It's the air in their heads that keeps them bouncing off the ceilings and wanting to rise into the sky like some tacky Mylar balloon with some ridiculous statement on it. Now look at the things I just said. I don't sound very tolerant and understanding, but then I take exception to a million plus dead in the Middle East, to the Children's Crusades, to the Inquisitions, to the slavish, mindless adulation of the self-chosen, who stand out as the biggest mass murderers in history, bar none. I consider myself lucky having grown up on military bases, because the military was integrated before just about anything else, and I grew up with black playmates and never knew that there was such a thing as prejudice, not even realizing that there were no black kids in my school until I saw a girl come into the seventh grade. A lot of things don't dawn on me due to their absence, and that is another place where appearances need to be considered. We only see what's right in front of us, and less often what is peripheral, and seldom, if ever, what is not in view at all. We have to remind ourselves and ask ourselves all the time, what am I not seeing? Why am I not seeing? What am I not seeing because it's not there? And what am I not seeing even though it is right in front of my nose? What am I not seeing because I am in denial? What am I telling myself is not there because I don't want it to be there, because it gets in the way of what I want to believe is there because it suits my self-interest? One of the keys to being in harmony with Mr. Apocalypse is to be in sync with him. When he wants to show you something, don't argue with him, because that isn't going to work, and it will be painful until you get into sync with him. How do you address this, then? Make it easy on yourself. You give up all your preconceptions about anything and everything. The reality of this is that if your former preconceptions were correct to begin with, they will be correct again. If they are not, then they won't come up. What this means is that you don't have to worry about anything, because it either is or it is not, and the truth of either will be shown to you when it is necessary. We worry about things all the time, and it serves no useful purpose whatsoever. Worrying never helped or fixed anything. It is a negative meditation, and it works contrary to your best outcome. Embrace your inner Alfred E. Newman and say, what, me worry? Too many people go after things from the outside in. There are basic and consistent realities that you have to have operative to live an effective and functional life. You need to make your spiritual life the centerpiece of your existence. God has to be at the core of your being. You need to be mindful of diet and eat to live instead of living to eat. You need to understand the essential power of the sexual force. The world of the present in this Kali Yuga is geared to sucking off all your stamina and strength. Now, I'm not some kind of uptight moralist or anal retentive who gets squeamish about human contact. I can assure you I have rocked and rolled. But when it counted, in the early years, I worked with full retention, and that was certainly significant in bringing about my Kundalini experience. In the latter stages of this existence, I am just as mindful about channeling this force into the areas where it is needed. There's something I've noticed about people when they get older. Chronic things set in. We become prey to our weaknesses and vices if we have not instituted a disciplined mindset. We are prone to rely on things like alcohol. We eat without thinking. We find it difficult to be alone with our thoughts, and so we have a blitzkrieg of external input going on via the television, the radio, or some kind of device that isolates us from our internal workings. Observe old people. I call them old because they think themselves old, and life and circumstances accommodate. Some of us don't get old. It doesn't happen, and this is tied in with the sex force, too. You have to have a game plan. If you don't have a game plan, then your thoughts, words, and actions will provide one for you, and that is definitely not the way to go. One of the things that by turns amuses and distresses me is the mindset of the New Age junkies, who are so certain they are right and who know more than the Vedas, the Upanishads, and so many of the timeless reservoirs of truth. One fellow came around recently and said to me, "So now you see that there is no karma. Good." The implication was that he was resident in some high tower of wisdom, and I was just a befuddled individual who was deceived about ancient imperatives, because, according to him, there are no ancient imperatives. There's no karma, etc. This flies in the face of everything we see. It is one of the most ridiculous statements I've ever heard. Now, I'll admit that there is more to karma than the general understanding of it, and I agree that there are people who have mastered their karma, and some who are Jivanmukti, which I like to think I'm approaching, but I don't know other than things I've been told, and so far the things I've been told have come true in some fashion, not always as I might have literally understood them. I must say that the New Age egomaniacs often get to me as much as the political correctness junkies. I look into things that they say and the obscene amounts of money that they make, and it rubs me the wrong way. For several years, people were telling me I should check out Eckhart Tolle. I had heard about Tolle being on Oprah, and I had to admit to some prejudice in this regard. If you appear on Oprah, you need to establish some kind of credibility with me that cancels that appearance out. So far, no one has done this. I don't watch Oprah, but elements of her operation do come to my attention, and I know that she is fabulously rich. So finally, I went and checked out Eckhart Tolle on YouTube, because I wanted to see what his persona said to me, and I also wanted to give him a chance. I've rejected people out of hand before and found myself surprised later on. What I experienced was a droning hypnotic boredom that made me anxious, restless, and uneasy. I had to shut him off. He was not speaking to me. I can see that he speaks to other people, but boy howdy, he does not speak to me. Then I heard about the outrageous amounts of money he charges for people to hear him speak. Then someone who had personally experienced him told me about the bags of cash that he leaves his lectures with. The more I looked into the guy, the less simpatico I had for him. This has been the case with just about every New Age magic elixir salesman I have ever encountered. I can't think of anyone who has impressed me in an authentic way. For a long time, I've been hearing about A Course of Miracles. I had a New Age girlfriend at the time, and suffice to say, we didn't get along very well. It was a star-crossed romance, to be sure, and resulted in my facing a life in prison sentence. To be obliging, I looked into The Course of Miracles for a while, and it left me restless, uneasy, and uncertain of the intentions of the authors. So I looked into the background of the authors, and that was all it took. I went back to the things that worked for me. Now, I'm not saying that A Course of Miracles does not work for some people. And if it does work for them, I'm happy for them. Years ago, I had an occult spiritual bookstore. I had asked for one a year or so earlier, and God dropped one in my lap. I wanted this so that I could have a job and read full-time in the spiritual and hermetic realms. I had been doing this for a couple of years when Rajneesh appeared in my windshield. I ordered some of his books and I read some of them. My first impression was that he was recycling teachings that I had already encountered by Lao Tzu and others. The associations were obvious to me. I did note his clear and lucid presentations, but it was clear to me that I wasn't personally going to get anything from him. Rajneesh, or Osho as he was later called, has some seriously devoted followers. Over the years, I have had some problems with his followers. Not because they hound me about getting into him, but because of a general behavior trend on their part, having to do with business, money, and having no moral compass. I know people have gotten things out of him, and that is all that's important. I didn't get anything out of him, but that is not to be considered a criticism. It's just how it hit me, and no one should assume that I'm generally criticizing all the people mentioned, except for perhaps for Tolle. Sometimes people rub you the wrong way. That is the case here. On the other hand, I came across a fellow named Mikhail Ivanov some time ago, and he really spoke to me. He was a major influence, a student of Peter Dunov, who was from some kind of esoteric Bulgarian brotherhood. His words rang in the deeper recesses of my heart. So it was with Lao Tzu, Ramana Maharshi, Ramakrishna, Paramahansa Yogananda, and some others. Different strokes for different folks. That Iron John guy drove me nuts, too. This extends into the alternative media as well. I have much enjoyed David Icke's books, but I don't much enjoy David Icke. He hits me as a carnival barker and a serious self-promoter. A lot of people in the alternative media leave me cold, oftentimes because they just don't pass my litmus test. There are very few people who ring the bell inside my heart, my head. I have to go with this. Excuse me. That's just how I'm made. If at some point I go through a transition of some sort and some of these people become meaningful to me, then I will change my point of view right there and right then. This is the best I can manage, and I'm comfortable with it. Okay, this is a little different radio show than we have had in a while, and I hope it didn't distress too many people. It is critical to me to be honest, whatever the cost to my status and standing with the listener and reader. As it stands, well, we've come to the end of another broadcast. And as usual, I'll see you next week. Well, if there is one. Although I haven't been as consistent in recent times with this as I or you might have liked, well, I am trying to get that together. In the meantime, the in-between time, it is my fervent prayer that you walk in the light, be surrounded and protected by the light, and may the light activate and speak within you of all the things that are contained in the light. That said, Hare Krishna! Hail Lord Jesus Christ! Alhamdulillah! Fondest regards, Baha'u'llah! Om Amitabha! Greetings, my dear friend, Lord Ganesha. Aloha and Aru! Later.
God's not dead, he's merely hiding. You can see him in the morning when the sun is rising. God's not dead, merely hiding. You can see him in the morning when the sun is rising.
Feet to Fire is a production of IPS Media Works on the OnSync Radio Network of Stations.